That's how often you humans manage to obtain that which you do not want. And those sage words come from a very famous fictional character by the name of Mr. Spock. You want to know more about it? It's coming up next right here on The Right Stuff.
You are listening to the best, the only place to be on Tuesday night. That's right, you're listening to The Right Stuff, and you're at the right place at the right time. From England to Canada, from Detroit to the Coconuts, we are showcasing Christian authors worldwide, giving you tips, tools, techniques, and resources for you, the writer, to hone and perfect your craft. Tune in every Tuesday at 7 o'clock p.m. Eastern Time, right here on WPJC 104.5. And your host, Parker J. Cole.
Hi, and welcome to the show. You are at the right place at the right time. I'm the queen of Tuesday nights, Parker J. I am so excited for this edition of the show. We're going to have a fabulous time with the godfather and the grandfather of apologetic fiction, Keith Allen Robinson. But we'll get to him in just a few moments. First of all, I want to thank you all for your support of my writing career. Can you believe we've been doing this together for the past 5 years? I can't believe it. 5 years in July. And it's all because of your support. I really appreciate everything you guys have done for me. And for those of you who reached out to me because of the death of my friend, thank you so much for showing your love and concern. I don't take it lightly. Thank you so much for caring about how I was feeling, and thank you all for your support. I really appreciate you, and I could not do this thing without you. We have been together for a long time, and as God wills it, we'll be together continuing on until he calls us home. If you want to weigh in on our topic, you know you can. Call in at 646-668-8485 and then press that 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter at Parker J. Cole, hashtag right stuff. With your questions and comments, we're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We will be right back.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on The Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Are you a reader looking for more compelling Christian fiction? Maybe something a little more edgy or a bit more real? Are you tired of most Christian fiction shying away from the truth and settling for a rose-tinted view of the world and its issues? Or are you an author who has a compelling story to tell, but you're afraid it doesn't jive with today's brand of Christian or secular fiction? Are you tired of Christian publishers telling you that your content is too edgy? Or maybe you've tried submitting your content under the radar to secular publishers, only to be told your themes are a bit too religious? We invite you to take a look at the Crossover Alliance. We are an online publishing company that specializes in edgy Christian speculative fiction. Speculative fiction with Christian themes and real-world content. Our company is formed from authors and readers just like you who are breaking into the mainstream and Christian markets with this compelling genre. Head over to the www.thecrossoveralliance.com for all the details on who we are, what we do, and what we accept. Right now, if you sign up for our email newsletter, you'll receive a free digital copy of our first short story anthology. Check us out today and help us spread the word about the Crossover Alliance, where light shines brighter in the darkness.
If you are an author looking to gain visibility for your books, then authorshout.com is the place to go. We have a wide variety of affordable products and services to include a member zone that will help you get the word out about your books. Our team here at authorshout.com specializes in creating stunning digital products to include book banners, teaser videos, book trailers, book covers, and a whole lot more. So what are you waiting for? Stop by authorshout.com today and let our team connect you with a world of new readers.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J. and her guests, right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5. again, so glad you are here with me. I'm really excited about this particular show. I'm always excited about all my shows, but this gentleman has been heralded as the grandfather, the godfather of apologetic fiction by many fans I've talked to about his work, because apologetic fiction is a new, relatively new genre that's coming into Christian fiction, and I'm really excited to dig into it because apologetic fiction is as it sounds. It's taking our love for defending the faith and putting it in the medium of fiction. And usually that goes towards speculative fiction. As you all know, Parker is a huge advocate of Christian speculative fiction, and I love apologetics. So guess what? Put it all together, you have got a great show. So I'm really excited to talk to the godfather and the grandfather of apologetic fiction, Keith Allen Robinson. We're going to be talking about his series today. It's called the Origin Series, but we're going to be talking about his first book in that series, A Logic's End. And I use the quotes from Spock because I love Spock. Who doesn't? But I use the quotes from Spock because I wanted to get your ideas about this quote. The quote simply says, "Curious how often you humans manage to obtain that which you do not want." And it's very interesting because if we follow logic, things generally tend to go to their logical conclusion. And that's kit and parcel of what this book, Logic's End, is about. But I'm not going to talk about it. Keith is going to talk about it. So without further ado, I'm going to introduce our guest, co-host, and contributor today, Keith Allen Robinson. Keith, how are you doing today?
I'm doing fantastic, thanks. I have to say, I've never been called the godfather or grandfather. It makes me sound so old.
Oh, no, it's a position, a title. You're like Marlon Brando, the godfather, you know. You're going to make us a book we can't refuse, you know. We're going to get that. So I mean, a couple of people, they said, oh, my gosh, he is – I mean, there, a couple of people who reached out to me, they were like, this guy is the grandfather of apologetic fiction. And that's more of a title, not a thing. But, and then just so exciting, your brother, when I connected with him, he was like, you have got to read his book. So I'm just really, really excited to have you on board to talk about your books, to talk about apologetic fiction, just kind of bring it all together. But I'm calling you the grandfather, godfather of apologetic fiction, but you may not call yourself that. So go ahead and tell us who you are in your own words.
Well, I honestly, I didn't set out to be an author years ago. I actually, surprisingly, I have a master's degree in music education, and I'm a public school teacher. But years ago, I had an idea. I was studying the topics of apologetics, specifically creation and evolution, and I was teaching a Sunday school class at church to adults. And at the time, I was just fascinated by what I was learning about apologetics and answers about creation and evolution. And I at the time, the Left Behind series was really popular, and I decided, I said, man, if somebody were to take what I was learning about creation and evolution and just repackage it into action-adventure stories, like kind of like they did with End Times Prophecy for Left Behind, I thought that would make a great story, or, you know, it would be something really fascinating because everything I was learning was from nonfiction sources. And I just thought that there's so many young people, especially, who are not interested in reading nonfiction. They want stories. They want something that's exciting and fun and action-packed. And so I decided, I just had an idea for a story, and I decided to try my hand at writing because I had been an avid sci-fi fantasy reader for so many years, you know. And the book just ended up taking off, and it's been doing fantastic. In fact, just last year we did a second edition of Logic's End because it had been almost 10 years since it was first published, and it's done so well. So I'm just really excited about the journey that God has taken me on. And after I wrote Logic's End, I decided I had two more books that I decided to add on to that to make it a trilogy. And then I started another series, and now I'm working on my third series, and it's just really exciting.
And we have those books pictured in. If you're listening in at the link, we have those books in the slideshow for the link. So make sure you go ahead and check out Keith Allen Robinson's books. And one thing I love about what you said, Keith, is that your journey into a creation and evolution kind of mirrors my own. When I came into it, I have been questioned by an atheist, probably about the same time you got this idea, 10 years ago or so. And he had asked me questions I didn't have answers to at the time. And so the first thing I did was delve into creation versus evolution. And I ate up everything I could possibly think of. I mean, I went to all types of different creation science ministries, everything. So creation and evolution, that is one of my hot topics in apologetics. I love talking about it. And me being a sci-fi girl, too, I just love it. I absolutely love it. And what I want to send out to our listeners here is your thoughts on the quote, "Curious how often you humans manage to obtain that which you do not want." I want to get your thoughts about that. So make sure you weigh in via Facebook, Twitter. You can call in at 646-668-8485. Let me know your thoughts and your comments, and we're going to read them on air and have Keith respond to them. Now, one thing you mentioned about this book, you mentioned that our main character, Rebecca Evans, is a staunch evolutionary scientist, and she finds herself on this distant planet. Now, when it comes to evolutionary theory, what is your view on it?
Well, I've done a lot of research on this, obviously, having written the three books, but I'm also a public speaker on apologetics as well, and I was I was the extension director of the Creation Science Society of Milwaukee.
Oh, nice.
I live in Kenosha, Wisconsin, which is just south of Milwaukee. And so I was part of that ministry for several years, and I've done a lot of research. Basically, whenever you're talking about these kind of topics, you always have to define your terms. And so when I'm referring to evolution, I'm referring to the kind of evolution that's molecules to man, that over billions of years, things gradually evolved slowly and changed from one species into another until you become, you know, until you get humans. Some people define evolution as kind of changes within a species or changes within a kind. But I'm talking about what's sometimes called macroevolution, which is one thing changing into another. Another way to look at it is horizontal versus vertical changes. Horizontal changes are, you know, the different kinds of dogs that we see around us. They're all still dogs, but there's lots of different variety of dogs. Horizontal change would be a dog, you know, evolving wings and turning into a bird, or, you know, they like to say dinosaurs evolved into birds, you know. So regarding that kind of evolution, massive macroevolution, I just believe that the science is against it. I think that the arguments that they use for evolution that's in the textbooks, I have a whole presentation on this, they really don't point to macroevolution. They're more dealing with variations within a species, which, by the way, natural selection is true. We see that happening in nature. We see certain animals having certain character traits that survive better in a certain, but they already have the genetic information in their DNA code to adapt to their environment. All right, does that make sense? They're adapting to their environment using information they already have in their DNA. And that is one of the biggest, to me, arguments against evolution, is that we have been studying mutations and supposed, you know, evolution for so many years. But the thing is that in all that time, we've never observed a single instance where you can gain new information. We're talking new information within an animal's DNA. In other words, let me give an example. A fish, they say, crawled out of the water, eventually developed lungs. But a fish doesn't have the DNA to create lungs. So where did it get all that information? And lungs are a complex structure. You can't just form it piece by piece by piece. You have to have everything, all the apparatus there at once, otherwise it doesn't work. And so that's one example of how the science shows evolution doesn't work. Mutations mess up what's already in the DNA. It doesn't add anything new. So if evolution is going to work on a massive scale, you have to add new information.
I like how you mention and really define your terms, because this is a hot discussion right now, because when I was first reading about it, this was really starting to become really hot when I first got into it about 10 years ago. And what's been happening is that more creation scientists, industries, whether they're OEC or YAC, they tend to have their research more and more scholarly papers to respond to. I remember for myself, when I was listening to this, no one had ever told me this. I had never been told certain
things.
Yeah,
me too.
I had never been told that. And to find out that these things existed, you find out you've been lied to. That was the thing that kind of did it for me. I've been lied to.
Absolutely.
And these were things that people knew, and they lied to me. And you kind of sit there going, if you can't critique the theory, because this is what's happening too, if you can't critique the theory, then why do you have it if you can't critique it? I think no movement is above critique. If you can't critique it, then what's the problem? You just can't automatically say, you know, this isn't true and just believe what we tell you to believe. You know, one thing that answers in Genesis, I support Answers in Genesis, and I support ICR and some other creation science ministries as far as like, a, you know, on a personal level. But one thing Answers in Genesis did, they did a rebuttal of the flat earth theory. And I remember thinking, oh, my gosh, the earth is not flat. But you know what they said that I really appreciated what they said? They said, you can't just say that's the stupidest thing you've ever heard. You really have to dig into why that is stupid. You have to dig into why do they believe that? Why does that? Even right. if it makes true, you just don't accept that face value. And that's what happened for me in studying about evolution and creation. There are things that I did not know. And that's why I like that this book is – that this series is dealing with origins. And we talk about origins from creation, origins of civilizations, origins of languages, and other things that's involved with this series that Keith Allen Robinson is doing for us. So if you want to call in and weigh in, you can by calling in at 646-668-8485 and then press that 1 to be live on air. Make sure we get your question and your comment. Now, one thing you mentioned is that, and this is important too, one thing you mentioned is that, you know, the way you're using evolution in this book is macroevolution, which is the molecule to man changes. That's what you're using. But when you mentioned that natural selection exists, that it really is true that there are changes within the kinds and different species, that's something that's not bad. You know, it's like the Lord right. gave us what we needed to survive in an ever-changing environment and climate. So when you hear rebuttals to that, what are some of the rebuttals that you hear? Because I'm sure that these are some of the things that pop up in Logic's End. So what are some of the rebuttals or critiques you heard regarding that argument?
Well, before I get into that, I want to mention, I want to respond to something you said. One
sure.
of my favorite things, in fact, I sign all my books for Logic's End. Whenever I sign a book for Logic's End, I put this quote in there. It says, "Real gold fears no fire." In
yeah.
other words, if your theory is true, If the gold you have, let's talk about the analogy first. If the gold you have is pure and true gold, then if you put it in fire, it's only going to refine it and make it even more pure. In the same way, if your belief system and if your worldview or your philosophy is true, the more you analyze it and critique it, the more it's going to come out to be true. So we have nothing to fear as far as questioning, what we believe. In fact, some questions, you know, questioning is very good for your faith. So, and I wanted to mention, too, that I actually, my books are footnoted with research from Answers in Genesis and ICR. So I'm also, my books are based on their research and things like that. In fact, I have a very good friend of mine who is the content manager of the Ark Encounter. So that's very, yeah, in fact, he has some apologetics fiction work, too, that's on my website. So him and I kind of share the website a little bit with a couple other authors. But, okay, rebuttal.
Nice.
Rebuttals. A lot of times people, they just get confused with the micro and macro evolution. They like to think that if we can show that there's change within a kind or variation of any kind, then you extrapolate over millions of years. A lot of times it's the time factor, the hero of evolution. They just say, oh, you just can't imagine it because it's so many years. I mean, if there's small mutations in one generation and then the next generation, it adds to that mutation and so on for millions of years, you could easily get a different creature. But
yeah.
no matter how many millions of years, here's an analogy for you going back to the DNA issue and the information issue. Imagine that shuffling cards is like shuffling your DNA, right? So
yeah.
how many millions of years of shuffling cards would it take you to create a new card?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Do you see
go
my
ahead.
Point?
Figure
you can,
it out. Yeah.
You can
go ahead,
shuffle
figure that out.
Cards. You can shuffle cards for millions and millions of years, but you'll never create a new card because creating a card is a different process than shuffling cards. In fact, the more you shuffle the cards, the more damage they're going to get, you know, ripped corners or bent, you know, things like that, worn out. And that's exactly what happens in our DNA. We have mutations that are wearing out the perfect DNA that we once had, you know, going back to the dawn of, you know, when God created Adam and Eve. So, I mean, that's exactly the process we see, which, again, a lot of people, the rebuttals that we receive or critiques we receive is that, oh, you're just using God because you can't explain it. Well, no, actually, we're looking at what we can observe, and we're drawing conclusions that best fit the evidence. And do I have time to talk real quick about just two different kinds of science here?
Well, before we do that, we do have a caller calling in. We do have G-Muse calling in from New York. G-Muse, how are you doing today?
Doing pretty good, Parker. Can you hear me?
I can hear you just fine. You got a question or comment for our guest?
Yeah, I just wanted to call a couple of them, if that's okay. I wanted to call in and say that I've been a fan of Logic Zen for a long time. I originally read it a few years ago. And, you know, as someone with a – my degree is in biotechnology and molecular bioscience, and I really appreciate how well he explains things, you know, because, you know, me as somebody with a background in science, I used to when I was younger, I used to be really skeptical of creation. I used to have this idea that if you didn't believe in evolution, you were stupid. I just want to definitely say to the audience that, you know, that stereotype isn't true. There's thousands of scientists who are creationists. There's thousands more who are intelligent design advocates. So, I mean, just because Galileo might be in the minority doesn't mean he's wrong. And so it's a, you know, I definitely want to throw my two cents out there and just say that, you know, he's definitely explaining it really well. I can definitely second what he's saying because, you know, as somebody with a background in science. Do you guys still hear me?
Oh yeah, we can hear you, Keith. I want you to respond to that, please.
I'm honored and humbled. I appreciate that. I appreciate your support. You know, as someone who I don't have a science background, but I've done a lot of research on this, and I have, like I said, people who are knowledgeable on the subject matter who critiqued my books and made sure that my writing was accurate. And so it's encouraging to hear that, yeah, I was on the right track. and also just I just am humbled that, you know, it's nice to know that there's plenty of readers out there who are enjoying my work.
Yeah, and I definitely, if, you know, my next comment/question was, I definitely really, I enjoyed the book because I loved the, you think about things in a way that's really interesting. Like the idea of saying, well, if evolution were true, what would a world like that look like? And there's probably a lot of possibilities, but as I read your book, I'm like, this is definitely a valid, possible world. You know, especially with having not to make any spoilers, but having it where you have lots of different types of animals that are really smart, you know, because like from an evolutionary perspective, it's like, why is it that only humans are sentient and so far beyond anything else? And yet the one creature that happens to be sentient also has hands, has the ability to have vocal language. So, I mean, we're also just the right size to be able to make fire and things like that. And obviously there's a lot more technical things I get into, and that's very surface level. But with writing, I guess my question was, with writing apologetics fiction, how do you find that balance between, like, apologetics and philosophy and having a story? Because, like, obviously, you know, you don't want to underestimate your readers because, like, you look at The Matrix. I mean, it's filled with philosophy, and it's very much the allegory of the cave. You see different references to Hindu ideas. You see Christian ideas. So there's a lot of that in The Matrix, and it's one of the most popular movies of all time. And yet you don't want to be breaking out an essay and writing at your reader.
Absolutely. That is probably the heart and soul of the questions that I get about apologetic fiction, because I've read some bad apologetic fiction. And in some cases, in some of my novels, you know, I look back on it, I'm like, yeah, I might have gone a little too into, you know, too detailed in that area. But basically what I do is I come up with a basic – I try to do as much as possible of showing some of the apologetics, rather than just talking about it. You will know, because you've read A Logic's End, that I try to have a lot of situations occur that force a conversation on something. You know, they find a fossil, and so they're kind of forced into that conversation, or, you know, I don't want to give any spoilers either, but I take my plot and my apologetics topic and I try to weave them together in such a way that if you took away the apologetics, some of what happens in the plot would not make sense. Like, the reason the characters do what they're doing is because of stuff that happens in the plot. Whereas some of
are you
the
talking about that?
Sorry, go ahead.
Are you talking about that scene where they actually, I'll let you finish first. Sorry.
Yeah. There's a scene where they find a fossil and they're walking through the caves and stuff like that. But, yeah, it's a very, very tough balance. My goal, in fact, I'm changing my approach for my new book series, but my goal is to whet the appetite of the reader and to kind of pique their interest as opposed to give them a full-out treatise because I have a story to tell. But I want them to know that there are answers out there, and I want them to think through some of these issues. And, yes, I'm going to have some characters do some dialogue, but I really want to show some things and just kind of pique people's interest, make them do their own research.
Gotcha. For the record, I actually really liked that scene. I'll admit, it was a little bit wordy. But then again, like, people watch Star Trek, they watch different science fiction things. They watch Jurassic Park, and you have that scene in Jurassic Park where they're like, "Oh, we got dino DNA from the amber," and so
right.
I mean, sometimes people like having those conversations, and that's entire episodes of Star Trek are almost built around these philosophical ideas.
Right. It's
so
it's
I want
to
make
fine
sure.
balance. Yeah, it's a very fine balance.
I want to make sure another caller can come in. Parker, could I read my comment real quick, or should I get going? Okay.
No, go ahead. We're talking to Keith.
All right. Awesome. So, Keith, I hope I'm not opening up another whole can of worms with this one, but I recently read, I don't know if you ever heard of Atlas Shrugged.
Sounds familiar.
It's a book that they made into a good book. They made into a terrible movie, what you were talking about with Spock kind of reminded me of the philosophy of Ayn Rand, who's she's gotten kind of a bad rap in Christian circles, and she was a big critic of Christianity. A ministry called For the New Christian Intellectual, which I wasn't trying to plug them, they have looked at her stuff and argued that based on what's called rational self-interest, if you're a Christian, you'd want to stay away from sin entirely. So like when you said with Spock, being amazed that humans, work so hard and end up getting exactly what they don't want, I'm like, this is almost a summary of what sin is. And it reminded me of the whole idea of rational self-interest, which if you reinterpret into a Christian worldview, you kind of get that. But I'm sure all that's kind of probably a topic for another episode. But I just wanted to throw that comment out there that that's what it made me think of.
Well, G-Muse, I want to thank you so much for joining in the conversation. We do have to take a quick break. So I want to thank you so much for
joining in the
conversation. You always add to the conversation. I appreciate that. And, Keith, I really appreciate you taking the time to answer our callers' questions and respond to them. If you want to call in and talk to Keith, you can by calling in at 646-668-8485 and then press that 1 to be live on air, or hit me on Twitter, Parker J. Cole, hashtag right stuff with your questions and comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick break. We'll be right back after these messages.
Don't go anywhere. More with Parker and her guest on the Right Stuff Radio Show. We'll be right back.
Have you read the latest issue of SOARMAG Digital, the award-winning literary magazine for multicultural readers and writers? SOARMAG Digital is available quarterly and showcases interviews with the best authors in multicultural literature. SOARMAG Digital features craft and business articles for those interested in writing. If you're looking for a good book, check out our book reviews on what's hot in multicultural literature. For writers looking for new readers to get in front of, SOARMAG Digital is the perfect place to introduce your book. We offer advertising spaces that fit your your promotional budget. Get your free subscription on SoarMag.com or order a print issue on MagCloud.com. If you would like more information about SoarMag Digital, check us out on SoarMag.com or contact us at SoarMag@Yahoo.com. SoarMag Digital is the magazine for multicultural readers and writers.
The Speculative Fiction Cantina is your weekly hypodermic injection of science fiction, fantasy, horror, alternate history, and things weird and wonderful in the world of books and writers. You'll hear from writers who bend the rules and drive the narrative. We ask authors the hard questions. We do the show in our pajamas. Join S. Evan Townsend on this journey over the rainbow and through the looking glass. The Speculative Fiction Cantina on Rightstream Radio every Friday at 6 p.m. Eastern.
Question: if you write a book, everybody will rush out to buy it. Obvious answer: no. If you were a celebrity or if you had a huge marketing budget, then maybe you can get a lot of exposure for your book. Another solution would be to check out JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com is a promotion and marketing service with access to over 1/3 of a million followers on Twitter. JoeyTweets.com has 3 packages available to fit any budget. That's JoeyTweets.com. JoeyTweets.com. Get some serious exposure for your books.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J, and her guests right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WPJC 104.5, having a fantastic time with my guest co-host and contributor today, the godfather of apologetics fiction, Keith Allen Robinson. We're talking about his first book, Logic's End, and the series that it's a part of called the Origin Series. And he'll be talking about his other works, too, later on in the broadcast. We just had a great time talking to one of our callers, G. Muse from New York, and he was just giving us a lot of good stuff there, but we don't have time to really respond to everything that he said, and so we're going to continue on with our discussion with Keith. And Keith, before the break, we were talking about the two sciences that you were going to expand on that kind of helped with creating logic sense. So go ahead and give us an education about that.
Well, one of the things that I learned as I was delving into the topic of creation and evolution is that really when you think about it, and this is another area where a lot of people, they get confused by this or they've never really thought it through, is that there's really two types of sciences. There's what's called operational science, and then there's the other science, which is historical or origin science. And the difference between them is operational science is the kind of science that you can do in a laboratory and it's repeatable. You know, it's you mix chemical A and chemical B, you know, and you get chemical C. And if you do that tomorrow or somebody else can copy your work and get the same result. And that's the kind of science that gives us computers and it gives us technology and puts man on the moon and all that kind of stuff. The other kind of science, though, is what's like forensic science or archaeology. It's where you're trying to uncover what happened in the past, a past event. And so you're looking at the evidence that you still see today, but you're trying to extrapolate and figure out what happened in the past. And any time you do that, whether it's, you know, your favorite, you know, murder mystery show or whether it's archaeology, there's always an element of interpretation to that. So one of the things I like to say is you can have two scientists, both have PhDs, and they're both looking at the exact same evidence, but one of them comes from a creation perspective, the other one comes from an evolutionary perspective, and they draw two totally different conclusions by looking at the exact same evidence. And so when people say, oh, evolution is proven, it's a proven fact, it can't be a proven fact because it's talking about something that happened in the past. Now, we can look at the evidence, like the fossil record and the rock layers and, you know, all this different kind of evidence that we see, you know, the ice rings and things like that, and draw conclusions from those, but you can't, it's not the same as operational science. Does that make sense?
It does, and it's a valid point to bring up in the discussion of creation versus evolution. Is a very valid point, and those nuances become extremely important when you are making certain conclusions based on the evidence that you have in front of you.
And so that's a really good point to bring up, which is why I'm sure that in Logic's Inn, our stalwart heroine, Rebecca Evans, who's a staunch evolutionary scientist, is going to have her world knocked upside down. So go ahead, tell us a little bit about Logic's Inn.
Yeah, I'm glad you asked that because I got to thinking about it. I'm like, I could spend the whole whole show plus another show and another show to talk about evolution and creation.
And we sure
We
sure can.
Yeah. But in what I do is I take some of that stuff and weave it through the course of a novel. Now, the story, as you mentioned, is about Rebecca. She's visiting. It takes place in the year 2034, and humans find another planet that looks like it may contain life. And so they send a team of scientists there to check it out. And once they arrive, Rebecca is surprised and gets kidnapped by this group of mutated animal creatures. And the more she interacts with them, the more she realizes that this is a world where evolution is played out to its logical end, that it's there's these different clans of creatures that are warring against each other for survival of the fittest. And she convinces one of the clans that if they take her back to her ship, so she can get off the planet, she will give them greater technology than what they currently have. So the humans have greater technology than the aliens in this particular book. And so on their way back to her ship, they encounter all sorts of other stuff. All these different clans are wanting the technology because whoever has the greatest technology has a better survival advantage. And so along the way, because of what she sees on this planet, she starts to question her evolutionary beliefs. A simple one to give you, again, without giving away too much, is that she learns that on this planet, every creature is asexual. Because if evolution is true, why would you, and according to the evolutionary idea, single-celled organisms started reproducing themselves. And over time, they just kept reproducing more and more to create more and more complex beings. Well, that's called asexual reproduction. You don't need male and female. You just, one creature is giving birth to another one like it. Well, that's a very effective method of reproduction. Why would you ever split into male and female? Especially considering the female body is more complex than the male body. And so the male body gets evolved and then waits around for a couple another million years or whatever for the female body so they can reproduce together. It just doesn't make sense. So she realizes by encountering these creatures that they're all asexual and reproduce asexually. So it's just, that's the kind of stuff that's included in the book, just a lot of different logical arguments like that.
One thing I like about Logic's Inn is that you have a smart woman as your heroine, okay? And right now, this climate of we need diverse books and we need more representation, blah, 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 feminists all up in the thing, Christian feminists all up in the arms, and everyone who's a feminist is like, we need to recognize that women are just as smart, which I've never doubted, by the way, but that women are just as smart as men and we need to have this, you know. So what made you choose a female? Because, you know, most of the time, especially when this book was written, most of the time there were males, white males particularly, you know. And so now, you know, what made you say it's going to be a girl?
Well, I'm trying to actually remember back when I wrote it because it was 2004 when I started writing the book. And, you know, I made the decision back then. I think at that time there weren't a lot of female lead characters in movies and books and stories and stuff. And I wanted a little bit of that diversity, but I chose a female because I wanted that I wanted to make sure that the reader could really connect emotionally with the character, and I felt that a female would allow that a little bit better. There's a kind of a subplot with her friend there's a subplot with Rebecca not being able to have children, and that plays a role into it. And then there's a subplot with her best friend, with the death of her husband. This is all in the first two chapters. So, I mean, that kind of stuff I felt had more emotional punch by making her female. Then obviously if she had been a man, a male character, she wouldn't be able to have children in the first place, and so you can't do that subplot and different things like that. So that was kind of the reasoning for it.
You know, it's interesting because I was listening to a few of my Christian feminist friends, And one of the things they said is that, you know, there are some things women, only women can understand. And there are some things you can really grasp with women. And with some things only men will actually understand. You can, and men can really gravitate towards that. And so once we have this balance of male and female, that they're both equally smart, just have different strengths in different ways, it stops becoming this huge issue. You know what I mean? And so I can appreciate mm-hmm. that even though she is a scientist, she's also a woman who has insecurities, she has problems with not being have kids, you know, all kind of these things. And that makes us more relatable, and I really appreciate that. Now, the fun part, well, I got to ask you, I'm sorry.
I was just going to say, one of the things I've learned over the years is that if you want people to enjoy your book, it's got to be driven by characters. You got to have great characters they can relate to. So.
Oh, yeah, I totally agree with you there. And I was going to ask you that a little bit later on, because there are people who are writing apologetic fiction. Like I said, it's a growing genre now. I've had a few people who wrote apologetic fiction on this show as well, and it's growing. But one thing, they have to be able to balance the apologetics with the fiction, because sometimes you can get so bogged down by the apologetics you forget there's a story here, you know. So I actually read one a few years back. It's a beautiful story, huge intelligent design motif behind it, all about intelligent design. But there's like three pages of this guy talking. I'm like, we get it. You know what I mean? We get it. Okay, you're making your point. We got it. You know, so you got to kind of balance that.
Yeah, I watched a movie about that. I watched a movie one time. It was a Christian movie, and it was like 45 minutes of story. And mm-hmm. then there was like a half hour to 45 minutes of just apologetics. And then mm-hmm. I went back and did another half hour of story afterwards, and I was like, this is just the wrong way to do it.
This is wrong. If you want to capture our attention,
you have to pepper your plot mm-hmm. or salt your plot with apologetics. You can't just dump it all on at once.
Oh, yeah, because apologetics in and of itself, Keith, it's a massive undertaking, because you're taking you're using all kind of critiques and arguments to try to make a point, whether it's evidential apologetics, historical, whether it's suppositional. You know, you're taking all these different aspects and you're putting it into your fiction, and you got to be able to balance that, because a lot of people don't want they're okay if it's apologetics fiction, but they don't want apologetics. You know, they want to be able to go, wow, that's a really good idea. Is she going to get the guy in the end, or is he going to find his way home? You know, they want to be able to have those type of questions while they're being stimulated by the apologetics. So that's why, like I said, a couple of your fans have called you the godfather of apologetic fiction. Again, it is a title. Like I said, you're going to make us a book we can't refuse, you know. So really excited about that. You're writing this story, you're enjoying it. You say, you know, all the stuff you're learning, you put into your book. So what were some of your favorite characters that you love to hate, and your favorite characters that you hated to love, if I could say it like that? What were a couple of your favorite characters?
Well, now, are we just referring to the Origins trilogy right now?
Yeah, in the Origins trilogy. I know we're talking about just Logic's End, but the whole trilogy.
Oh, my goodness. I had so much fun with the characters of Logic's End, because they're not your good guys. Yes,
mm-hmm.
they're the main characters, and they're the ones, quote-unquote, helping Rebecca. When you read the story, you'll understand what I mean. But these characters, it's a survival of the fittest. And so one of the key points in the book is that these characters will turn on you if your usefulness to them is used up. And so they're not the nicest guys in the world. So you have all these different kind of alien creatures or mutated animal creatures, and they're just nasty with each other. They're mean. And I will say this. My book, there's nothing inappropriate in the books, but they do with some heavy topics, like abortion and suicide and euthanasia and things like that. But there's nothing inappropriate in the books. So I usually get this question too, of what age level. I usually recommend for Logic's End probably about 12 and older, maybe late middle school, early high school, on up. I mean, they are adult novels in the sense that they're, you know, adults can read them and enjoy them. But you know, some of the heavier material can be a little bit much for younger audiences. But I love Sicarius. He's one of my all-time favorites. And again, I don't want to give any spoilers, but he's very unique in that book. And then, of course, Ritz Newell, the snake guy, is just, he's such a jerk. You got to love him. And then, of course, the comic relief of Logic's End is Charan. And he's this little kind of armadillo-based alien that's insane. In fact, mm-hmm. he talks to an unseen being that I kind of, Rebecca struggles with that because he's clearly insane, and she thinks about how maybe Christians kind of come across as a little insane because they talk to an unseen being as well. So it's just a lot of, he was a lot of fun to write because he's just so whacked. He's just so crazy. So
what has been some of the reader response to Logic's and to the series in general? What has been some of the responses you've received?
It's been very humbling, and it's the kind of the responses that has encouraged me to continue with this. Because, again, going back to what I said before, I was not intending to be an author. But after I wrote Logic's End, like my own niece, she commented, she said, this was back when she was probably 14, and she said that she used a lot of the arguments that were in Logic's End to witness to some of her friends. And the reason why she remembered the arguments is because they were in a fictional story. Mm. It's kind of like, in fact, I talk on my website about how Jesus used parables to teach people. So, I mean, you might not remember some of the Sermon on the Mount, but you remember the Good Samaritan story, don't you? You know what I mean?
Right.
You remember the point because of the story. And so my niece was able to remember a lot of the arguments from Logic's End because it came from story. But I've had families, I go to a lot of homeschool conventions and sell my books. I actually have study guides for the Origins trilogy on my website for free download for anybody who wants to use them. I've had homeschoolers, they tell me that they've bought them for several of their homeschool friends, and they've also they've incorporated them as part of their curriculum because they're talking about science and creation evolution, but it's also English classes and grammar and vocabulary. And so the responses from the homeschoolers are like, I had one lady, she told me, she said, my son told me he doesn't like to read. And then when I bought him Logic's End, all of a sudden he came back and said, Mom, you know what? It's not that I don't like to read. It's just that I haven't found something that I really like. And he said, this is what I really like.
Wow.
And I've had families that come to the homeschool convention on a Thursday, and they'll buy Logic's End because it's the first in the series, and they'll come back the very next day and be like, would you believe that my son couldn't put that book down and he read the whole thing in one night? So here we are. We need the rest of your books. I've even had some. I go to Christian Music Festival up in Oshkosh, Wisconsin every summer and sell my books. And here it is at a Christian Music Festival where you've got like Casting Crowns and Newsboys and all these bands there. And they'll do the same thing. They'll buy my book the first day and come back the next day. I'm like, seriously? Don't you have something better to do than read my books at a Christian music festival? I mean, I'm honored, but man. So it's been, the response has just been phenomenal. And I've had a lot of parents just like, my kids want to read sci-fi fantasy, but most of it that's out there is junk. And I don't want them reading it because it's all evolution-based and things like that. They're like, thank you for writing these kind of books. And not only am I okay with the sci-fi stuff, but you're also teaching them about their faith. So it's been really exciting.
And that's the point, I think, with apologetic fiction is utilizing all these very interesting arguments, evidences, and suppositional elements. You're building into a story, and people don't even know they're being taught because they're so engrossed in the story, you know. And that's the nice part about what you're doing. We're going to go ahead and take another quick break, and when we come back, we'll be talking about some of Keith's other work that he has coming up, his other series and more, and he's going to give you a special announcement. So if you still want to call in, you know you can. Call in 646-668-8485 and then press that 1 to be live on air or hit me on Twitter, Parker J. Cole, hashtag write stuff with your questions and comments. We're going to go ahead and take a quick short break. We will be right back.
God gives humans the gift of making amazing stories to glorify Him. At SpeculativeFaith.com, our ministry is to help fans explore fantasy, science fiction, supernatural stories, and beyond from an intentional and biblical Christian perspective. We share daily articles and have extensive archives tackling hot topics like end times beliefs, the art of writing, creative excellence in the Christian subcultures, discernment, sex, magic, Harry Potter, and space aliens, and the Bible. If you are a parent or anyone else with a discriminating palate, our reviewers explore fantastical novels, movies, television, and games in light of God's beauty, goodness, and truth. Want to find Christian stories? The Specfaith Library lists every fantastical novel we can find from a Christian author. It's all part of our mission to discern, engage, and enjoy fantastical human creativity in honor of our Creator, Jesus Christ. SpeculativeFaith.com, exploring fantastical stories for God's glory.
Engaging the culture's imagination through speculative fiction, The Untold Podcast produces audio fiction from a Christian worldview. Find us over at untoldpodcast.com, where we partner with authors to tell science fiction, fantasy, supernatural, and horror stories. Find links at untoldpodcast.com to subscribe via iTunes, Stitcher, and a variety of other platforms. Each month we produce high-quality audio fiction that's free to download and free to listen. Our submissions are open, and we're always looking to add another great story to over 24 hours of narrative entertainment. Find all of our audio fiction over at www.untoldpodcast.com.
Authors, are you looking for a new way to get your book in the hands of new audience of targeted buyers? Then a virtual book tour is for you. Right now, virtual book tours is an excellent opportunity for you to introduce your book and who you are as an author. Launching your book is very important. A virtual book tour will connect you with readers. We at WNL, we specialize in book tours, book blasts, radio tours, cover reveals, and promoting and marketing your book is what we do. Online publicity, the exposure and the publicity is what you need. Let us help you reach new readers and a new audience. We take care of everything so you don't have to. We set up the tour for you. We connect you with bloggers to advertise your book by way of interviews, guest posts, and reviews. If you are an author of a newly published book, have an upcoming release, or just want to give a previously published book new life, a virtual book tour is your answer. Check our tours out at www.wnlbooktours.com. Visit me on Facebook. I am the owner, Paulette Harper.
We're back, and you're hanging out with the queen of Tuesday night, Parker J, and her guests right here on The Right Stuff.
Hi, and welcome back to the show. You're listening to The Right Stuff here on WTJC 104.5. Let me tell you, I have been having such a fantastic time with my guest co-host and contributor today, the godfather of apologetics fiction, Keith Allen Robinson. He is the author of the book that we're highlighting today called Logic's End, but it's part one of a series. And what Keith has done, he's taken the apologetics of origin and he's turned it into a beautiful book that your child from ages 12 to up can read. They'll be entertained by it. If you are a homeschooler looking for more things to help with your curriculum, you can get this book. So definitely do me a favor, love my brother today, and go on Amazon.com or wherever books are sold. You go to his website, apologeticsfiction.com. You can go there and buy this book and other authors who contribute to this fascinating genre that is exploding in Christian speculative fiction. And once again, Keith, thank you so much for being with us on the show. I have been having such a great time talking with you. And the thing about it, we haven't even really scratched the surface of this. So looking forward to have you back on the show to keep talking about it soon. But I wanted to give our listeners an opportunity to know what else you're working on. So go ahead and tell us about your upcoming projects or your next projects.
Well, actually, I wanted to start by mentioning that books 2 and 3 of the Origins trilogy deals with dinosaurs and the Ice Age and Neanderthals and biblical history. The way I processed it was basically Logic's End is showing some of the flaws of evolutionary theory, and then books 2 and 3 take the reader through the history of Earth and say, well, if evolution's not true, then what's the alternative history of the Earth? And so that's what the second and third books are about. It's kind of time travel through biblical history. My second series is called Tartarus Chronicles, and the apologetics topic of that series is world religions and making a logical reasoned case for Christianity as the truth. So through the course of 4 books, you're learning a little bit about Hinduism, Buddhism, Islam, Judaism, a little bit of Mormonism or Latter-day Saints, and more importantly, why Christianity is the truth among the religions of the world. all done in kind of a dystopian underground world. People are getting pulled from Earth through these mysterious portals to an underground world 200 years in the future that has all this advanced technology. And the main character is trying to reverse the portals to get everybody back to Earth. And the government's come after his technology. He's on the run. It's also a race against time because he learns that the underground world is starting to collapse. And so, a lot of fun stuff involved in that second series. But I'm really, really excited about my next book series called the Scar Song Trilogy. I spent much of last year, 2017, actually just doing the preliminary work building the universe because it's basically an entire another universe where God is the great composer and where music can manipulate nature, where if you sing the right notes with the right rhythms and the right harmonies and the right chord progressions, you can actually shape rock or create fire or hypnotize or heal people or even pilot spaceships and things like that. It's an entire universe based on music. And if you remember, I said earlier in the show that I actually have a master's degree in music education and I'm a professional violist and violinist. I play in local symphonies and things like that. So I'm well-versed in music, I'm well-versed in sci-fi, and I'm well-versed in Christianity. So I'm putting the three together to create Star Song, and I'm actually excited that I'm just going to be starting a Kickstarter campaign in the next day or so to help me raise some funds to publish the next book, which is the first one in a trilogy. And it's just really exciting. I've already got an artist, Michael Lynch, who's working on some of the concept art for the universe and the different races and stuff like that. And there will be apologetics in this series dealing a lot with worldviews. I'm actually finishing up, I don't know if you've ever heard of the Colson Fellows Program. It used to be called the Centurions Program. It's based from the Colson Center for Christian Worldview. I'm actually currently enrolled in that program, and I'll be finishing up in May. And I'm basically taking a lot of what I've learned about worldview, Christian worldview, and the way we understand the world and things like that, and putting it into Star Song. So if you're interested in supporting me, check out my website for a link or go to Kickstarter in the next day or so and support me. And the best way people can communicate with me or keep tabs on what I'm doing is to like my Facebook page. I have two of them, either Apologetics Fiction Facebook group or my Keith A. Robinson author page on Facebook. Or again, you can go to my website, apologeticsfiction.com.
Fascinated about Star Song because I've always felt that the arts in general lead to a transcendent nature of ourselves. And I've always felt that because we express ourselves through art, that was an untapped industry. I always felt like that was untapped in a lot of sci-fi because a lot of sci-fi is very technical, and the fantasy tends to be more artsy without the technical. So I find that absolutely fascinating that you're doing it through music. I did a show several weeks ago about, you know, what if we're singing? We have an audience of one to our Lord, and He's judging us on our performance, you know. But because we mess up the performance, He comes in and fixes it all for us. And then at the end, He says, "Well done," you know. I remember using that illustration, to kind of give a basic idea of what our lives are for Him, whether the song that we sing is pleasing to Him in our daily walk with Him. So that's fascinating stuff there. And I was laughing as you were saying, because we hit the right notes, the right rhythm. I was thinking, well, hopefully all these beings in this world can sing, you know, because some of us on earth, you like, did a cat die and get dragged across the street? First thing you think. Because, I mean, I can sing myself, but I know, like, for example, my husband, he couldn't carry a tune if you shot him, you know. You had a gun to his head, it's not happening, you know. So that's just a fascinating idea, and I love that. I love that whole idea. Can't wait. And I saw from the concept art, to our listeners, that Keith shared on the Apologetics Fiction Group, good, fascinating stuff, and his illustrator is just wonderful. So definitely encourage you to support Keith and his Kickstarter campaign. Again, you can go to his website, apologeticsfiction.com, or just simply like him on Facebook, and you can get more updates about that. Make sure you love him, my brother, support him, because support him through his Kickstarter, or you can support him by buying his books and leaving a review. Remember, I tell you, reviews help authors breathe at night. It lets us know
Absolutely.
That we did what we said we were going to do. And if we didn't, we'll know about that too, so we can get better at this thing we call writing. You know, one thing, Keith, I've enjoyed our conversation. It's been absolutely phenomenal. We are so close to out of time. What I want to do is have you, in the last few moments we have left, I want you to encourage our wannabe authors out there, the wishers, the dreamers, because this show is always about having the author to pick up the pen and use the gift that God gave them to write that story. So go ahead and encourage those aspiring authors out there today.
You know, I'm going to equate it to Star Song, because in music, it takes years and years of hard work and practice and dedication to be able to perform at a high level. And it's no different with writing. It's very similar. In fact, I mean, you need to just hone your craft. You need to practice. Write as much as you can. Get people that you trust to critique it for you. There's so many different skills involved. You have to be able to build good characters, build exciting worlds. You have to be able to be good at the English language. You have to know your vocabulary. So there's so many skills and crafts to be able to connect paragraphs together or ideas or thoughts together so it's not disjointed. You know, there's so many different areas. You just got to keep plugging away. If you know that it's God's calling that you do that, then throw yourself into it wholeheartedly and trust him for the outcome. If your writing impacts one person and helps them in their walk with Christ, then it's worth it all. So just keep plugging away.
Keith, thank you so much for being with us on the show today. It has been an absolute pleasure, and I cannot wait to have you back and have you back real soon.
Thank you very much for having me on. I look forward to it.
We were talking today to Keith Allen Robinson. He is the godfather of apologetics fiction with his first book, Logic's End, which is book one of the Origins trilogy. This is what I want you to do. Go ahead and pick up a copy of this book, not tomorrow, today. Love of My Brother, today, and get a copy of this book. It's available on Amazon.com. Or you can go to his website, apologeticsfiction.com. It's not just him that's writing apologetics fiction, but there are others involved as well. Maybe you want to write apologetics fiction. Maybe you want to get involved in this growing genre under the Christian speculative fiction category. I encourage you to read these books and then see how the Lord can use your gift that he gave you and pen your own novel. Maybe the book that God has put in you just needs a little help from those who have gone before us. And like we said, we talked to the Godfather of apologetic fiction today. And let me tell you, there's more out there. You heard about his newest work, Star Song. He's having a Kickstarter campaign. So this is what I want you to do. Love him, my brother, and support him via his Kickstarter campaign for Star Song. You definitely want to encourage all our authors that we have on this show, because what we do is go towards the world and we tell them that, you know what, you don't know, first of all, what Christian fiction is or what Christian nonfiction is. And guess what? Christian fiction isn't just Amish fiction, isn't just bonnet fiction. It's fiction for every genre out there. And Keith Allen Robinson is holding up the banner as the godfather of apologetics fiction. And we're going to have him back on the show soon, so stay tuned for more updates from me. Thank you so much for joining me for this edition of The Right Stuff. You have a wonderful, absolutely glorious, blessed day, and God bless.
Thank you for joining us for this edition of The Right Stuff. Follow Parker online at parkerjcole.com. To hear this show and other shows, visit the show archive at therightstuffradio.wordpress.com. We'll be back same time next week, 7 p.m. Eastern Time.